After what feels like two very long years, the presidential campaign is finally over. For some particularly astute analysis of what the country has endured, we decided to go to very insightful people who have examined all the vagaries of the various candidates. Richard Belzer, who was here last to talk about his novel from Simon & Schuster called I Am Not a Cop, and you can see him as a cop on Law & Order, SVU?
Special Victims Unit.
I thought it was SUV, but I guess we're not doing that anymore.
That's another show where a celebrity gets hit by an SUV every week and we solve the crime.
He's also enjoyed a long career as a stand-up comic. And Liz Winstead is here. She's co-creator of The Daily Show, was one of the people who helped launch Air America Radio. Her latest creation is the weekly onstage comedy show Shoot the Messenger. And I'm very pleased that they could join me today. Hi.
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 So how did this campaign compare with others in terms of gathering comic material?
Liz?
I couldn't find anything funny in this election. It was hard. No. I think what happened for me, the gross incompetence of the actual campaign itself was great. Certainly Sarah Palin provided a lot of humor for all of us involved.
She really became the focus of most of the humor, didn't she?
Well, she did. McCain also did. I think the media did in and of itself. I think last night for me, when CNN started showing holograms of people on the CNN, not live people, but it was as though Star Trek had taken over CNN.
The end of actors.
It is. It's the end of actors. And I think the media has played a role as much as politicians themselves, for me personally.
Yeah, I think the media was so off on this entire election with the things like the Bradley effect, which were non-existent in 1982. Tom Bradley, for those that don't remember, was the mayor of L.A., ran for governor, was ahead in the polls, and then lost. And people said, well, it's because people say they're going to vote for a black person and they're not. That turned out to be a myth. The end of that race, I was there, so in California, the polls were tilting towards the Republican. They were going up, and in the last few days, they put in tons of money over certain issues on the ballot. So, you know, he lost because he lost. And for some reason, the mainstream, the corporate press in America is obsessed with this, who's going to vote for a black person? And, you know, and they say this is a conservative country. I think both of those things are totally wrong.
I think, was it Newsweek that had an article that said a liberal for a conservative country?
Yeah.
But the polls don't indicate that. I'm still stuck on the holograms. I thought the holograms were Phil and Wendy Graham. I didn't.
Well, it was just shocking. I mean, there was graphics popping out of the ground on CNN.
Yeah, it's the future.
They've replaced the research division mm-hmm. with the graphics department,
I think. Right. Following up on what you were saying, Richard, is it harder to make fun of Barack Obama because of discomfort?
You know, I remember when John Kennedy was the president, and it was very hard to make fun of him because he was adored. And, you know, Von Meter did that record, but that was kind of sweet jibing. It wasn't really vicious.
We have the race issue here, and yeah, it's hard to make fun of a black candidate.
Well, we'll see, but I think this is great for black comedians.
Well, let's see how he fared as a wit.
For black comedians. Who, Barack?
That's not change. That's just calling the same thing something different. But, you know, you can't. You know, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
That wasn't from the Alfred E. Smith dinner, where he killed and he was great. I think this is going to be an incredible challenge to do jokes about Barack. My wife, I told my wife I've got to work on an impression of him. She said, you'll never get it. So I'm looking this as a satirist. This is a huge challenge because it's my job and Liz's job and people like us to find something that's funny. But I think it's not going to be vicious or mean-spirited, it'll be funny and hopefully it'll be cutting and insightful. And it's a great challenge. I mean, I'd rather have no jokes and have him president than have, you know, somebody else in where I had great material.
Well, I think comics always vote against their interest. You know, it's like, it's unbelievable. I feel really bad every time a Republican gets a, I feel like I should send them money at least because they make me so much money. But to your point, Richard, I feel like the color of Barack Obama is as an African-American man, it doesn't matter to me. I always sleep with one eye open when we're talking about politicians, no matter how great I think they are. A politician is a politician. Mm-hmm. And with that comes, you know, what promises did you make that I don't know? What corporate interests are going right. to be rewarded? So for me, it's like he's like any other politician. I am going to, when you do something, you know, hypocritical, I am going to be there. If you stick with the issues of a politician and when they backtrack or do something dishonest, that's where I like to jump in.
Did you see yesterday's New York Times where scientists claim that conservatives seem to be more capable of having fun and that they tend to be happier than liberals in general since they can rationalize social inequality, the scientists say, accepting the world as it is?
Well, they're in denial. So I didn't know Republicans believed in science.
They can justify their prejudices and be happy with it? Is that what that's inferring? And was it a conservative scientist? Those are my two questions.
Oh, now you're being an investigative reporter.
Well, that's how I started before I was a reporter.
But do you think that liberals and conservatives find different things funny?
Here's what I think. I think that this is a liberal country. I think I know since the 1960s when I've been studying this stuff, every survey ever taken, no matter what your political persuasion, if people are asked, would you spend a little more money for health care? Yes. Do you want clean air? Yes. Do you want good schools? I mean, we all want the same things. The idea that 24-25% of the population in the evangelical right have hijacked a major party, and starting in the 60s with Goldwater and Buckley and Russell Kirk and these guys with their Hobbesian view of the world, they took over school boards and ran for office and infiltrated the Republican Party. And today we see what happened. They destroyed it from within. So most people in this country, I think, are liberal. They want everyone to have a fair break. And most people in America are incredibly open-hearted, easily influenced, obviously, and manipulated, but...
Richard, you sound like you're running for office. Didn't you hear what happened to Al Franken? He probably lost the
election. He's only down by 300 and something votes. There is a recount.
Yeah.
And I think it's extraordinary that he got that close, and he still may yet win.
Well, I am
You used to work with him at Air America.
I'm also born and raised in Minnesota, so I know a lot about this. The guy he's running against is an amazing progressive, you know, the third-party candidate, and he got 15% of the vote. And if he was not—
So the third-party guy—
Was Ralph Nader running in Minnesota?
No,
ruined Al's thing?
I would have to say the third-party guy took way more votes from Al than Norm.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah. So the fact of the matter is yeah. But, you know, there's a recount. I think, though, it's
only 300 votes.
Yeah, but when you talk amazing. About satire and what conservatives laugh at and what liberals laugh at, I think it's interesting because, I mean, Richard and I think, come from the same place of— We like to speak truth to power through humor.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are in the power position, who are you making fun of? The not powerful?
But
then you're a bully.
But does YouTube undercut some of the stuff that you do? Because now people go there for their laughs.
Well, no, it makes it harder. They still want to see what we have to say. But the reality makes our job a little bit harder in some ways and easier in other ways. But I think this thing about liberals, conservatives, laugh. I've worked all over this country. And I've had audiences that are both liberal and conservative mixed together, and they all laugh at the same things. I mean, there's no liberal or conservative sense of humor. The conservatives tried to do a show like Jon Stewart. It was one of the most vile, loathsome, humorless things.
But that's because Jon Stewart is very brilliant.
Yeah, but
it doesn't
mean
everybody can be that funny, conservative or liberal.
Well, the point is...
No, yes, it does.
They hired a...
it does.
There's plenty of... Jon Stewart's brilliant, but there's many other... You have Richard Belzer sitting next to me.
No,
there's
no.
many brilliant political satirists.
And they're usually on the left.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Well, they were doing ACLU jokes, and they were doing jokes about Howard Dean from 4 years ago, and it was like, really? That's where you're deriving your
And they have a lot of, they had a lot of money. They could hire, you know, writers. And, you know, it's just that for some reason the conservatives don't write punchlines. They just write snide remarks.
When Joe Biden was here during the primary campaign, I asked him, I know it's unlikely, I said, Joe, but in case you don't win the nomination, what do you plan to do? And he said, you know, Leonard, nobody likes a smartass. Which I thought was quite witty at that moment and really did put me in my place. We have a little clip from Joe Biden.
I'm running to lead the free world. I'm running to lead this country. And the irony is Rudy Giuliani, probably the most underqualified man since George Bush to seek the presidency, is here talking about any of the people here. Rudy Giuliani. I mean, think about it. Rudy Giuliani, there's only three things he mentioned in a sentence, a noun and a verb and 9/11. I mean, there's nothing else. There's nothing else.
Great line. It was very witty, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was perfect line and true.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a sense that he wrote that? Don't politicians have joke writers who write them?
Yeah, of course they do.
They have joke writers.
Of course they do.
Yeah, I mean, Jon Stewart has joke writers. You know, we all have.
He does? I thought he just ad-libbed everything.
Oh, I know.
Got,
you know, America.
20,
yeah,
20 writers.
Amazing.
It doesn't matter how many writers anyone has. The thing is, what's the joke? What's the function of it? How does it serve the audience? I mean, you could have 1,000 writers. If it's funny, it's funny.
Well, I think also, too, as you watch how Colbert and Jon Stewart play out, now you see them using their, you know, video and their own words back at them. You know, it's like you mm-hmm. lay out the hypocrisy and then you come in with commentary. And so it's very hard. You know, it's great now. You really don't need the news because they will present to you in their own words what happened mm-hmm. and then they can comment on it. So you have this cause and effect right there. When Richard and I started 150 million years ago,
right.
we had to watch the news and then tell people what was on the news.
Right.
And then do our
networks.
Commentary about it. Yeah.
But what happens to you now if you don't have a venue? Do you just write down the stuff and think you'll use it somewhere down the line?
Or if you don't have a venue,
just talk to your friends.
If you don't have a venue, then you're a moron. There's an internet.
No, I mean, are you working
like
every
find
night?
Find venues
On stage. I mean,
if you see something, I don't know. I'm sure you watched the two speeches last night.
Yes.
And something funny occurred to you. What do you do with it?
Well, in my case, I would write about it and post it. If I'm going to be working this weekend, I would talk about it. In the old days, I went on 6-7 nights a week for like 5 years. mm-hmm. So,
and you had new material every day
because
there's always something crazy
going
on.
Yeah, I mean, the way I worked then, jokes had no shelf life because I talked about what was going on in the immediate present.
Mort Saul kind of started that, and also Lenny Bruce, didn't
and
they?
I
Juvenal
sort of carried
started
on.
It with the 16
yeah.
satires.
And I sort of carried on.
Juvenal,
but
he was
sophomoric.
Yeah, and that's how I work now. When I go out on the road, I basically take on what is that week's news. And
mm-hmm.
so I've got this whole crazy setup of music stands and notes and
oh good, that's cool.
It's
yeah.
fun.
Can we address that's Hillary and Bill, because they were really important in the campaign.
Yes.
I want to play something by Hillary first and then something by Bill.
Don't mess with Bill.
You don't believe that Senator Obama's a Muslim?
Of course not. I mean, that's, you know, that there is no basis for that. You know, I take him on the basis of what he says. And, you know, there isn't any reason to doubt that.
You said you take Senator Obama at his word that he's not
right.
a Muslim. You
right.
don't believe that he's a Muslim.
No, why would I? There's no,
right.
no, there is nothing to base that on, as far as I know.
It's just
as I know.
Yeah. That was yeah. That was something that people got very upset
by. That was
by.
A very ugly moment.
Well, you know, you have to, I'm sure you both know, you know, Hillary Clinton, early on, before Obama reared his beautiful head, was strutting around like she was the presumptive president, let alone presumptive nominee. And for this kid, this skinny black kid, as he likes to call himself, with big ears, came out of Chicago and took on the Clinton machine, is absolutely astounding. Books are going to be written about this campaign. This is, people are already saying this. I said it a while ago. This is the greatest political campaign in the history of the United States for a lot of reasons. Coming out of nowhere, taking on the big political machines, taking on the Republicans, and never succumbing to, everyone kept saying, take off the gloves, you got to get nasty. I was talking to Liz earlier about, I kept saying, this is going to serve him very well as president, that he didn't get nasty. You know, he's going to be able to govern all the people, not just his constituents.
Well, I also think, too, that we can talk about, it's just so obviously historic that an African-American is president, but I think it's just as historic that Democrats were organized. There was
the most organized campaign in the history of America.
Yeah, that's another thing. It wasn't a circular firing squad.
That's right.
My guests are Richard Belzer, who will be hosting the North Shore Animal League Dog
Academy
Celebrity Gala tomorrow.
It's the Oscars for dogs.
And then he and Richard Lewis will be performing at Town Hall on January 17th at 8 p.m. Liz Winstead is here. Tonight Is it tonight? Of the New York Comedy Festival, Liz has invited an eclectic group, Roseanne Barr, Baratunde Thurston of The Onion, Robert George of The New York Post, and he's a conservative commentator, but even more conservative commentator, Monica Crowley. Editorial cartoonist Ted Rall. You'll be talking about what we're talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, where we're going from here kind of a thing. And it's a whole wide variety of people. I have to tell you that we had to beg conservatives to come.
Well, what are they going to do now? I think the Republican Party is going to splinter into the evangelical wing and the so-called fiscal conservative wing. These guys made a marriage in hell. The right-wing intellectuals and the evangelicals, they have contempt for each other. They used each other. They made fun of each other behind their backs. And this is what happens.
Robert George, I did an event with him not long ago with Eric Alterman. And I think he voted for Barack Obama because even though he's a conservative and writes for the New York Post, he was so stunned by the Sarah Palin stuff and the values issues as exemplified by her daughter that he said that if Barack Obama had been running for president and it turned out his daughter was pregnant from some high school jock, wouldn't people say, you know, those black people cannot control their kids?
A gangbanger on Facebook. Did you see what her...
His
Facebook page?
Or MySpace page.
Palin's daughter's boyfriend. Did you see what was on his page?
It was unbelievable. The expletives. It was
filthy.
It
was just terrible. And as you say, if a
We're
black,
not playing that
if
clip.
A bla- no, you,
no,
don't you,
play
don't,
that.
You don't need to. If
but
a
don't
black
you wonder
kid,
if that
if
wedding's
going
to happen? Is
what?
That wedding going to happen now?
What?
Are they going to get married now?
I don't know. I could care less if I never hear from her again or of her again.
Well, anyway, we mentioned Hillary, who's been a trooper for Barack Obama recently, but Bill seemed reluctant to support Obama until about a week ago or so.
Well, this morning.
I don't know what happened to Bill, but I compare Bill. When my father retired, you know, my mother, he didn't know what to do with himself. And he would put on sort of like, you know, pants that maybe had inappropriate holes and stains and walk around the neighborhood and just kind of flail with crazy opinions. And my mother kind of had to reel him in and go, don't bother the Johnsons. I feel like Bill, on a national scale, was kind of that I'm retired and don't know what to do with myself and went off the rails with what do you mean? My wife is, she's 60 years old. She's sleeping at 11. It's dude, the AIDS thing is still happening in Africa. You were good at that. Focus on that. Mm-hmm. Things are good.
I think that the Clintons, as well as John McCain, were absolutely stunned that this kid came along. I think Bill Clinton is just livid that this guy is cooler than him. He's the real black president. Yeah. They did use veiled racism in the race and then got real livid when they were called on at the Clintons. But hopefully she'll be appointed to the Supreme Court and Bill will go back saving the world because he does great work.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that there was a lot of coded racism and yet it didn't seem to have had as much of an impact as anybody imagined.
Because this country is not as bad as the pundits would
have
us think.
And I think this country saw it so, as veiled as we all want to call it, people saw it for just what it was, political maneuvering, and they were disgusted by it. It's too crucial of a world we live in right now to have this kind of stuff in there, and people knew it, you know. Mm-hmm.
How would you compare John McCain as a source of presidential humor with George W. Bush?
Bush is much, 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 much better for humor than John McCain would have been.
Well, let's see how well John McCain did.
2, 3, 4. I was blue and I was always wearing a crown because my gal had turned me down. Then we met and you can bet I knew from the first.
That was Red Prysock.
Well, I will say that John McCain's a funny guy. I mean, I had him on The Daily Show.
Now.
Let's play the clip.
It's for the oil company. It was sponsored by Bush and Cheney. You know who voted for it? Might never know. That one. You know who voted against it? Me.
That was a crazy thing. But John McCain has been funny. I think it's interesting. When we talk about there's not really very many conservative comedians or who profess to be, I think like Pat Buchanan has made me laugh. I mean, I do believe there's punditry out
when
there.
When he puts the helmet on?
Yeah. Hilarious. Yeah. But I have laughed at people who I completely disagree with in spite of myself. And John McCain is somebody who
has... He said what he thinks. And he really did well at the Al Smith dinner.
Yeah,
they both of them did.
Yeah, I thought his McCain speech last night, he sounded so human.
Yeah, that was the most gracious speech you could have ever had.
And I'm saying, you lost your soul. It took you this to become human, this defeat. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned Sarah Palin. Everybody agreed that she was easy to make fun of. Maybe we should listen to a little Sarah Palin.
Oh, must we?
Yes.
You've cited Alaska's proximity to Russia as part of your foreign policy experience. What did you mean by that?
That Alaska has a very narrow maritime border between a foreign country, Russia, and on our other side, the land boundary that we have with Canada. It's funny that a comment like that was kind of made to, reporters.
Mocked.
Yeah, mocked, I guess that's the word, yeah.
Well, explain to me why that enhances your foreign policy credentials.
Well, it certainly does, because our next-door neighbors are foreign countries. They're in the state that I am the executive of. And
have you ever been involved with any negotiations, for example, with the Russians?
We have trade missions back and forth. We do. It's very important when you consider even national security issues with Russia, as Putin rears his head and comes into the airspace of the United States of America, where do they go? It's Alaska. It's just right over the border. It is from Alaska that we send those out to make sure that an eye is being kept on this very powerful nation, Russia, because they are right there. They are right next to our state.
On foreign policy, I want to give you one more chance to explain your claim that you have foreign policy experience based on Alaska's proximity to Russia. What did you mean by that?
Well, Alaska and Russia are only separated by a narrow maritime border. You've got Alaska here, and this right here is water, and then that's up there's Russia. So we keep an eye on them.
And how do you do that exactly?
We're running out of time, and I would love to hear the whole thing, but it's hard to
tell
which is which, isn't it?
Or then you add me into the mix there, because, I'm from Minnesota, and she co-opted our lingo. It's like, that's not even how people in Alaska talk, and all of a sudden she watched Fargo and started talking like that, and it's like, thank God our national nightmare is over with that one.
I have to have very little time, and I want to tell people again what you're doing. Liz Winstead will be at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8 p.m. with a slew of interesting people to talk about politics. You can find out all the information on our show page at WNYC.org. Richard Belzer will be hosting the North Shore Animal League Dog Academy Celebrity Gala tomorrow. Can anybody show up?
Yes. It's
I bring my dog?
Yes, it's the Academy Awards for Dogs and Cats.
And then on the January 17th, he will be at Town Hall with Richard Lewis. And I suspect that you'll still be talking about the election, because this is one of the most momentous events in
America. I do happen to have a quick blurb here from Obama's inaugural address.
No,